Hi, friends. This is Brock Polk, and I want to thank you for downloading this sermon from Heritage Church of Christ in Fort Worth, Texas. Our mission is to lead others to a thriving relationship with Jesus. And if you're ready to take a next step in your faith journey after you listen to this message, you can contact us through our website at www.heritagechurchofchrist.org. God bless you, and I hope you enjoy the following message.
I'm wondering this morning, now that the month of November is over, how much time you spent waiting in line last month. Now, if any of you were extremists who camped out in a Black Friday sale someplace, you know, like your number is going to skew the average quite a bit, I know. But waiting in line is kind of a fact of life that's just virtually true for all of us. Studies show that collectively, Americans spend about 37 billion hours a year waiting in line. And if you do the math, that averages out to about 20 to 30 minutes a day per person that we're waiting in some kind of a queue somewhere. We're waiting in lines in traffic. We're waiting in lines at the checkout. We're waiting at the airport. We're waiting in the bathroom. We're waiting in the drive-thru. We're waiting in line at school. Nearly every public place that we go, we're going to get in line someplace. And the crazy part about it is that every single one of us hates it, right? Like, none of us is enjoying this process. I guess it's better than the alternative if it was just a mad rush to see who could get in there first. But nobody's liking the process of waiting. Nobody's picking the longest line at the grocery store on purpose. You know, nobody's thinking, I want to spend a little more time here, you know, and these magazines and this candy stuff. I want to look at this longer. No, most of us have realized that waiting in line is a fact of life and it's not going away, but it can still create a lot of anxiety and a lot of frustration. A few years ago, at one of the airports down in Houston, they noticed a new trend. They were having a lot of complaints coming in about the wait time at baggage hold. When you go to pick up your luggage after you get off the plane, the wait at the baggage claim area, the carousel, was taking so long that people were turning in complaints about it. And so the officials, the leaders and directors at the airport worked on the problem, and they hired new baggage handlers, additional baggage handlers, and they shifted the schedule of when everybody was working, and they made sure to put a lot of people at the prime time so that they could handle the baggage as quickly as possible. And they got the average time from touchdown to baggage pickup down to below 8 minutes, which is really better than the national average anywhere else. But the complaints kept coming. People were still complaining about it, saying it takes too long. And so they had to go back to the drawing board, and all the leadership team went to the airport, and they're looking around trying to figure out the problem. And what they noticed was, from the time the door opened on the plane, people were walking a distance that took them about 1 minute to get to the carousel, and then they were standing there for 7 minutes waiting on their luggage to show up. And so they decided, the leadership team decided they'd take a different approach. Rather than trying to reduce the wait times even further, hiring more staff, they just moved the arrival gates further away from the carousel. Now passengers have a 6 minute walk to get to the carousel. And then when they get there, they wait for 2 minutes, and there are no complaints. Nobody's complaining about it anymore. It still took a full 8 minutes from the time the people left the plane to the time they got their luggage. But for 6 of those minutes, they felt like they were making progress because they were occupied with walking. And researchers tell us that occupied time feels shorter than unoccupied time, right? You know this is true. How many of you have ever looked at the traffic conditions on your route and you took the way that you knew would take a little bit longer, but the traffic was moving the whole way, right? You're making progress, and occupied time feels better than unoccupied time. If you've ever been to one of the Disney theme parks, you know that they are the masters of this. They use tricks in the waiting lines, to make your wait time feel shorter. They wrap the line around buildings so it feels like you're getting really close to the front until you turn the corner and you find out there's a whole other line way out there. Or they overestimate the wait times that they post so that when you get to the front of the line, you're pleasantly surprised. It was quicker than you thought it was going to be. They're trying to manipulate the guest experience. They're trying to manage the guest experience because the fact is most of us hate to wait. We're constantly training ourselves, in fact, to hate waiting even more than we already do. Because we live in an age of quick fixes, and it's making us more impatient. You've probably noticed with all the Black Friday sales and everything going on, there's a continued increase of all the retailers that are beginning to offer same-day delivery service. Can you imagine if somebody had told you 20 years ago that you could just pick up your phone and somebody would bring you anything, anything within 2 hours, and they would give you a discount code so that they would do it for free? You know, I mean, this is an amazing time we live in, but that's not all. Our culture loves time-saving strategies. We like speed dating. We like DVR. We like fast food. We like crash diets. We like video conferencing. We honk when the light turns green, right? Like, we're all about speed. We use abbreviations in our text messages. Now, you know why we do this, right? It's so that those instantaneous communications don't take as long. Like, we need it to be faster, LOL. We use our phones to check in at restaurants. We use our phones to tell the grocery store, I have arrived. Would somebody bring the groceries out to my car? This is a real technology that my family used last week, okay? All of this efficiency, though, it makes life feel so much more streamlined, but it also has the effect of magnifying the remaining inefficient moments in our life, right? We hate it. We hate it when something's taken too long. You ever sat and looked at the microwave counter and you're like, no, I can't wait that long. You hit the open button. We hate it when our streaming content is slow to load. I guarantee you, there are going to be people this week who will listen to this sermon streaming from our website. And if it takes 5 seconds to buffer, they'll say, nope, never mind. That's how it works. The studies show that if a YouTube video takes longer than 5 seconds to load, 50% of the people who clicked on it have already said, never mind, I'm on to the next thing. We hate to wait. And this impatience that is becoming not only part of our culture, but part of our personalities, part of our subconscious, this impatience is a serious problem for faith in our culture. I mean, things like slow online streaming and baggage claim and Disney wait times, those are all luxury problems to deal with. But I wonder, in fact, I suspect that our impatient tendencies carry over into other experiences, including our spiritual growth, our prayer, and our faith. Because I think that even in matters of faith, we hate to wait. And I think impatience could be one of the greatest threats to your faith and the faith that we're passing down to our kids. Which is why we're spending the month of December and the time of the year known as Advent thinking about the concept of waiting. For the last 1,600 years or so, since about the 4th or 5th century, Christians around the world have celebrated this time of the year leading up to Christmas by reimagining what it must have been like for Mary and Joseph to be anticipating the birth of Jesus. We've reimagined what it was like for people in ancient Israel to be anticipating, waiting for hundreds of years, the arrival of the Messiah that God had promised. And Advent, this season that we're in, has provided opportunity for us to focus on our own anticipation of Jesus's return as well. But some of our churches have focused so much on the history of the first century church that we failed to appreciate the contributions of Christians in other centuries. Can I get an amen for that? The truth is that our God has never, ever, ever worked on the timeline that humans expect. All right? You know this is true. God has never worked on the timelines that humans anticipated or asked for. That's always been the case. And it's a really important feature of faith for us to realize and reconcile. So this morning, I want to invite you to open up your Bible. And I'm just going to tell you, open up to the table of contents, because this is going to be a hard one to find. I want you to locate, it's one of the shortest books in all the Bible, and it's called Habakkuk. Some people pronounce it Habakkuk, but I'm going to go with Habakkuk all day because it just sounds cooler. We're going to listen in as a faithful man describes the difficulty of waiting on God. So when you find Habakkuk and it's near the end of the Old Testament portion of your Bible, when you open up to the book of Habakkuk, you are looking at the writings of a man who lived about 2,600 years ago, which means it was about 600 years before Jesus was born. Habakkuk lived in Judah, which is a region that included the city of Jerusalem, and he lived in a tragic time for Jews. The prevailing culture in his nation, the prevailing culture in Judah, had been ignoring God's commands for quite some time, despite a few isolated attempts to turn things around. And the culture was at this point dominated by injustice and violence and selfishness. Now, there were a few righteous people around. There were pockets of people. There were individuals who were still trying to express faithfulness to God, who were still trying to obey God's decrees and laws and instructions. But these people, you can imagine, in a culture that's full of selfishness and violence and injustice, the people who were trying to do right, they become targets. They become easy pickings for people who are crooks and thugs and liars and cheats. And Habakkuk is heartbroken by this. He's watching evil carried out right in front of him. He may have been even what he would call a victim of evil. Maybe it had been inflicted on him as well. And so he starts this book. He starts his writing that he's going to share with us by sharing the desperate prayer that he prayed to God. Here's what he says, beginning in chapter 1, verse 2. Verse 1 says, "This is the message the prophet Habakkuk received in a vision." And he says, "I was praying, 'How long, O Lord, must I call for help?'" Have you ever prayed that prayer? How long is this going to take, God? Hello? Anybody up there? You feel like your prayers are kind of bouncing off the ceiling a little bit. Nobody's answering. No response. It's just crickets. He says, "How long, O Lord, must I call for help, but you do not listen? Violence is everywhere, I cry, but you don't come to save." You're not doing anything about this. You're not fixing the problems that I am seeing everywhere I look. He says, "Must I forever see these evil deeds? Why must I watch all this misery? Wherever I look, I see destruction. I see violence. I'm surrounded by people who love to argue and fight." It's not just that they argue and fight. It's that they do it and they enjoy it. Like, this is what they wake up for. "The law has become paralyzed. There's no justice in the courts. The wicked far outnumber the righteous in my community, so that justice," he says, "has become perverted." He says, "God, this isn't working. Something's wrong. I've needed your help. I've been asking about it for quite some time. You know good and well this isn't the first time you've heard from me on this issue. How long is this going to take?" And the thing is, Habakkuk is experiencing what I think is a universal human struggle. He's wondering about the reason for all of the evil, all of the pain, all of the difficulty that's happening to him and happening around him. You see, I think in every culture in history, virtually every adult in history has wondered, what's causing all of this? What's causing this suffering? What's causing the pain? What's causing the evil? You know this from your history. The ancient cultures, they tried to explain the seasons and explain the weather and explain astronomy and explain natural disasters by telling each other stories about gods who were angry with humanity or fighting amongst themselves. That's why all of this is happening. That's why the volcanoes come and go, and that's why the storms come and the tornadoes and all of that. It's the gods. Some people in history and even in contemporary time look at the problem of pain and evil, and they decide, you know, with all of this going on, there must not be anybody out there that cares. There must not be any sort of divine being at all. This life is all there is. It's all about looking out for myself, and so that's what they do. Some people read the signs. They read what's going on in the culture, read what's going on in the world, read what's going on in creation, and they think to themselves, well, this must be it. And so they live for the moment, and they run over anyone who gets in their way. But that's not Habakkuk. Habakkuk is a believer. Habakkuk is a believer that is convinced God exists and God cares, but maybe God's taking a nap. You know, like God is out there. I know he's out there. But where is he? And so Habakkuk is wondering, when is God going to do something? When is God going to step in and address the problems that are going on? Because it's so obvious to me. Habakkuk is getting impatient. You ever had one of those moments? You probably did yesterday. When you're yelling at the TV because the referee missed the call that you saw. When you're looking at the game and you know that was pass interference. That was a false start. That was offsides. That was whatever. And you're yelling at the referee, only in the cases when it was violating your team, of course. But you're yelling at the referee and you're saying, when are you going to blow the whistle? When are you going to throw the flag? When are you going to do something about all of this? When is the authority going to step in and enforce a penalty? And that's what he's asking God. When are you going to do something about all of this? And he prays this prayer, and I don't know if he's surprised by this or not, but God answers him. God answers him. In fact, God lets Habakkuk in on the details of a plan that has been in the works for years. He lets Habakkuk in on the details. He says, Habakkuk, here's what's about to happen. I'm going to allow the Babylonian army to come and conquer Judah. I'm going to allow the Babylonian army to come and take over the nation where you live, where my covenant people live. And over the next few years, that's exactly what happened. The Babylonians attacked Jerusalem. They carried off thousands of its most capable citizens as captives back to Babylon. And Habakkuk hears about this plan. Babylonians are coming, going to take over my nation. Okay, God, follow-up question. Because he knows that the Babylonians are even more wicked than the Jews are. So he's a little confused. God, why would you allow Babylon to have this victory? I mean, yeah, I need you to deal with all of this stuff going on here in Judah, but why those people? Why are you going to let them win? Why are you going to let them have their way? Why are you going to let them throw a parade and say, look, we defeated the people of Yahweh. We defeated the people of God. Why are you going to do that? And when God answers the second time, he reveals a plan that's more extensive and more comprehensive than Habakkuk had dared to dream. Chapter 2. Habakkuk chapter 2. God says, Habakkuk, here's what I want you to do. Verse 2. I want you to write my answer plainly on tablets so that a runner can carry the correct message to others. All right? I don't know about you, but when I'm running, I can't carry a whole lot with me. So he says, I want you to make this really clear. Simple message, okay? It doesn't have to be elaborate. I want you to make it really plain. Here's what I want you to write down. This vision is for a future time. It describes the end, and it will be fulfilled. Now listen to this. If it seems slow in coming, wait patiently, for it will surely take place. It will not be delayed. Look at the proud. Now, think who he's talking about here. He's thinking about the Babylonians, this superpower who is slowly making its way, conquering its way, defeating its way across the Middle East. He says, think of the proud. Look at them. They trust in themselves, and their lives are crooked. But the righteous will live by their faithfulness to God. Now, you got to know here, God's playing the long game. He says, Habakkuk, just you wait. I hear your concern about Judah. I hear your concern about Babylon. I hear you. And I want you to know I've got a game plan for Judah. I want you to know, in fact, I've got a game plan for the entire world. It's going to be years before it's completed. But just you wait. Because my plan is right on schedule. And righteous people will find real life. They will discover real life by trusting that the plan is working. Of course, you and I understand why this is a challenge, right? You and I understand why this is a problem. Why this is hard to believe, hard to sink your teeth into, hard to hold on to. Because we've been in the hospital room. We've been praying the prayers. We've been at the graveside. We've wondered why things turned out the way they did. We know the feeling when it seems like evil is winning. We know the frustration when healing doesn't show up the way we hoped. We know how disappointing it is when our hard work and our attempts to do the right thing don't seem to pay off. They don't seem to make things feel any better. We know what that feels like. If you don't see any reason for asking God the same questions that Habakkuk was asking in chapter 1, how long are you going to let all of this go on? If you don't see any reason for asking God those kinds of questions just from reading the headlines this week, you're probably not paying attention. But God's answer to Habakkuk, and God's answer to you, he says, be patient. Be patient. He says, my plans will be carried out on schedule. They will be fulfilled. And so God asks his people 2,600 years ago, 2,000 years ago, and in 2018, God asks his people to have faith. He asks his people to trust the plan, to trust his promises, even when our senses and our surroundings tell us, this isn't working. Something's wrong. God's asleep at the switch, asleep at the wheel. Something's not working. When our senses and our surroundings tell us that it's all going the wrong direction, God says, be patient. Hold on. Have faith. God was asking Habakkuk to believe, even though the Babylonian army was knocking at the gate. See, the Babylonians were already on their way. They had a few other stops to make before they got to Judah, but they were on their way and word was out. And Habakkuk could see the writing on the wall. God was asking Habakkuk, though, I want you to believe, even though the Babylonian army is knocking at the gate, even though the Babylonians are going to win this war, I want you to believe that I'm not done with Judah. I want you to believe that I'm going to orchestrate a way for Judah to be resurrected in the future, and that Jerusalem, the city where you live, the city that you're about to see destroyed, sacked by the Babylonians, I want you to believe that Jerusalem is going to see the birth and the death and the resurrection of a Jewish man who will be the fulfillment of my plan for humanity. I want you to believe that. God was asking Habakkuk, I want you to have faith, even though it doesn't make sense. And that's the thing about faith. That's just always the thing about faith. The reason faith is so challenging is because it rarely makes sense. It always requires you to bypass your senses, to bypass your fears. Sometimes it requires you to bypass your logic. Faith is not about what we see and what we experience. Faith is about looking toward a promised future and believing, trusting that it's coming no matter how long it takes. Faith requires waiting. By definition, if you could prove it, if you could demonstrate it, if you could hold it up as evidence, then it wouldn't require faith, would it? Faith requires waiting, and patience is part of the journey, and I'm here to tell you it's going to take all the strength you've got. Think about what happens when you're forced to wait, when you're stuck at the train crossing on 377 or over in Saginaw. Anybody ever had this experience? When you're waiting on a website to load or an app to download. When the computerized voice says the current wait time is 47 minutes. Think what happens when you're forced to wait. Because in our culture, what we usually do is we give up. In our culture, we're tempted to give up. We're tempted to walk away. We're tempted to turn around. We're tempted to try again later or abandon the effort altogether. You know, returning this product isn't even worth it. I didn't really need to go to that store anyway. We just give up. But I'm telling you, that instinct doesn't fit the life of faith. That instinct doesn't work in the life of faith. And our current culture and our current technological advances are not helping us become more patient. They're challenging our patience. They're making us less inclined to trust in a distant future and a distant promised plan of God. The life of faith is a marathon. It's not a sprint. It's not something that you just work it out in a weekend. It's not something that you just learn the right way to pray and suddenly everything starts going right. It's a journey. It's a long journey. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. This season that we're in, Advent, it's all about waiting. Lots of the world's Christians try to put themselves in that mode, waiting on Jesus during this season. Try to put themselves in this mode where we think, okay, I'm trying to focus on my anticipation of Jesus' return, but it's taken a while, isn't it? It's requiring some patience. It's requiring long-suffering. It's requiring trust and faith, and it's requiring us to bypass some of our senses, to ignore some of our surroundings, to ignore some of the news that says this isn't working. It's requiring every bit of that. But God says to Habakkuk, wait patiently, because what I have promised will take place. It will be fulfilled. So I want to give you three things to remember. Three steps that are going to be so important for you to remember as you travel the journey of faith. Three tasks that are going to carry you along if you'll commit to this. This is how you wait patiently. All right? Number one, don't give up. Don't give up on the idea of God. Don't give up on the existence of God. Don't give up on the promises of God. There's going to be moments when you're tempted to give up. There's going to be moments when you think to yourself, I'm just not sure. My doubts are so big. My doubts are growing, and I'm just not sure. And that's going to be a critical moment for you to immerse yourself in the history of God's faithfulness so that you can remember how many times he has come through, though it wasn't on our schedule, how many times he has come through just the way he promised he would. Spoiler alert, it's 100%. Don't give up. Even when your senses, even when your surroundings, even when the news, even when your brain says, I'm not sure I can buy it. That's a moment to immerse yourself in the history of God's faithfulness. Don't give up. But the second thing I want to tell you is, along this journey, as we're going through all of this difficulty, as we have to wait patiently, don't freeze up. Don't freeze up and stop being active. You remember the lesson we learned from the Houston baggage carousel, right? Occupied time feels faster than unoccupied time. And so guess what? If all you do is just sit back and say, okay, God, just waiting on you to prove it, this is going to take a long time. But if you decide that you're going to use your energy and use your resources and use your attention to be involved in the mission of God and to join God in what he's doing and to help enact this plan that of reconciling all of the broken stuff to himself, if you decide to be part of the plan, it's going to feel like this time just flies by. It's going to feel like you hardly have time to get it all done because all of the opportunities that are out in front of you, all of the things that are calling for your attention in the name of God are going to seem like, wow, there's just so much that I could be doing. That's not a coincidence. God's doing a lot. There's a lot happening, and God is up to a lot of good in our midst. We just got to open our eyes to it. So don't give up. Don't freeze up. And the last thing I'm going to tell you is don't shut up. Don't stop talking. Don't stop telling the story. Yeah, tell it to other people, but tell it to yourself. Don't shut up and stop telling the story of God's faithfulness, because the story has to be told. And there's going to be a whole lot of people who go through their entire lives thinking, well, it's all just chance, it's all just luck, it's the gods, it's the stars, or there's nobody out there at all and none of this matters and it's just me. There's going to be a lot of people that don't know the story, and if we shut up, they're going to miss it. You know, There's a lot of tough stuff going on in our world, a lot of tough stuff going on in our country, in our region, in our hemisphere, a lot of tough stuff even going on here in our city. But Habakkuk says that's going to change. God says, wait patiently. God says, don't give up because my plan will be fulfilled. I want you to have patience because everything that needs to be repaired will be repaired. Everything that needs to be reconciled will be reconciled. But it's going to take patience. Faith and patience go hand in hand. You can't have faith for long without patience. And so I want to challenge you to establish your faith for the long haul. It's going to demand all of your time. It's going to demand all of your energy and all of your patience in the short 3 chapters of Habakkuk. The transformation in his outlook was drastic, such that after his conversations with God, after understanding and being reminded of God's past faithfulness and being assured of God's future plan, here's how Habakkuk responded. He said, okay, in spite of my senses, in spite of my surroundings, in spite of these predictions, verse 17 of chapter 3, he says, even though the fig trees have no blossoms and there are no grapes on the vines, picture this scene, this is not good. Even though the olive crop fails and the fields lie empty and barren and the cattle barns are empty, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will be joyful in the God of my salvation. He says, I'm going to keep worshiping in spite of my circumstances. I will keep worshiping. I will rejoice in the Lord. I'll be joyful in the God of my salvation. He says, the sovereign Lord is my strength. He makes me as sure-footed as a deer, able to tread upon the heights, which means he doesn't exactly make the path smooth and straight out in front of me, but he gives me what I need to navigate the mountains and the valleys and the rocks and the hills. He gives me what I need as long as I trust him. I wonder if that'll be your story. I wonder if that'll mark your advent as we wait together on the Lord.